I believe the importance of this, again, I mentioned briefly in the orientation, is that it's real difficult for a lot of people when you're in the midst of doing a daily living task, whether it's parenting, marriage, relationships, work, trying to survive, making a living, you know, whatever the reality. It's so easy to get so busy, blocked in your daily routine, that you can't see the world around you. You can't gain perspective. And the natural consequence of that is it creates a lot of personal isolation, a lot of despair, a lot of loneliness, a tremendous amount of fear that happens inside of us when we're locked into kind of a real small vision. And you know, it's kind of like in your own daily living. Have you ever found yourself thinking so hard about what needs to be done that you don't see the sunshine, you don't stop and smell the roses, you don't see the mountain for the day, you know, that? Because when you get turned inward on yourself like that, what happens is that you lose touch with a great amount of your power. You lose the connectedness to your community, to your world, and so you really limit your resources, and when you limit your resources, you limit your power, and we lose a sense of self-care. So a lot of what I'm talking about in terms of perspective is to help you recognize that culturally in Western civilization, in the United States in particular, we're going through a tremendous turmoil and change, transition. Family, as it has been known traditionally, you know, over a number of years, is radically changed and is in the process of changing ever more. Church is radically changing. The whole definition and meaning of community is radically changing. And there are a number of factors of that. And without recognizing it, many of us get affected and influenced by those factors. And we begin to experience the crises and the turmoil. You know, kind of we go through the death cycle of losing or just being torn in that process, and never acknowledge or never have it acknowledged or validated for us that we have been impacted by that. So that when we're not able to function the way we used to, or we're not able to reach our dreams that we have maybe set out in our youth for where we wanted to go in our life, we begin to take it personally, like there's something wrong with me, without recognizing that maybe the real core issue is that we're involved in a much larger movement, culturally, historically, nationally, community-wise, and because of the impact and the effect of that community change or that cultural change, that we get victimized. Because anytime there's a change, it means there's a major shift in values, a major shift in energy. And as the culture strives to adapt itself and change itself, a lot of norms, a lot of purposes and focuses and hopes literally get shattered. People get lost. People suffer. And we're in the midst of a major change like that today. You know, divorce rages on anywhere from 45% to 50%. In our culture, which says the institution of marriage and the traditions and values and beliefs about what cause and what make a healthy marriage are inadequate. And because of the raging phenomenon of divorce, separation, widowhood, you know, when you include all of those kind of phenomenon, suddenly the whole concept and perspective of family changes. And if we are not aware of that reality, and many times we get lost because we just simply start to, and we talk about different levels of survival, and the first level of survival is coping. You know, that I just simply on a crisis mode do whatever I need to do to cope with whatever's going on in my world. And survival skills or coping skills are one, they're spontaneous reactions to an environment to do what is ever necessary for self-preservation. The limits of surviving and coping mechanisms is that they're often very erratic and inconsistent. They are often very explosive. They often leave you in the wake of a lot of disaster, turmoil, change, guilt, loss, pain. Because when we do those kinds of behaviors, we are often reacting out of our gut, not reacting out of any kind of logical construct or any system or perspective of awareness. And so many of those things get transformed, and the people who they affect most are the people who are closest to us. When we are in personal turmoil, it is the people who are closest to us who suffer that turmoil with us. You can't live with somebody that closely and when you're in crises and when you're coping and trying to survive, that it doesn't impact them. And I'll explain more of what that means, especially in terms of parenting and child rearing, what that major impact and crisis can be for a person. So I think it's important to be able to understand some of the phenomenon that happens so we can begin to at least maybe identify and recognize, if you see yourself in any part of this transition, to recognize that you're not alone in the culture. There are millions upon millions of people out there who suffer the same turmoil. And the issue is not your inadequacy. The issue is more a sense of knowing where to go to get support, knowing how to identify and seek out healthy resources that can help me realign myself so I can get back to a balanced sense of self and literally work at redefining structure of family so that family becomes something viable, healthy, and alive with one another. Now, a lot of us tend to think of family as mom and pop and kids. You know, that's kind of been an American tradition. See, but this whole concept of mom and pop and the kids is really a relatively new phenomenon. That phenomenon is what we call the nuclear family. At best, the nuclear family phenomenon is about 40 years old. Okay. Meaning that is not the standard. It has been preached as the standard for several generations, but it has not been the standard. When you really begin to look back, you begin to look back to the phenomenon that most of this culture comes kind of from European ancestry, where what was heavily involved is what we call the extended family. In other words, communities of family that tended to live in real close proximity to one another. And so when you were involved in the whole familial process, that the larger extended family had a lot to say about what went on. Marriages and love relationships were often arranged and had to be approved by family systems. When there was child rearing, there was usually a whole hodgepodge of people who came in to support. Like in some of the European families, for example, when a mother gives birth to the child, the mother doesn't spend the first month with the child. The grandparents do. The grandparent moves in and takes over all of the household chores, all of the rearing chores, so that the mother can go through a process of recuperation. And those were traditions that still exist in some cultures and still exist in some places in the United States. But a lot of that has to do with, and let me take you back a little bit further. When we begin to look at the culture of history, a lot of the attitudes and values about family and parenting go way back. Some of the earliest organizations are kind of the tribal shamanic periods. And basically the concept of tribal shamanic was in the origins of when people gathered together in small bands. And usually in that kind of phenomenon, you had somebody who was the shaman or the wizard or the priest or the... And that was the person who was the one who set structure and boundary and who gave the answer to all of that. And we have hung on to a part of that tradition. A part of that tradition is that, for example, in the extended family, there's usually a patriarch. Okay. some systems, it's the matriarch, and depending on what culture. Patriarch is the patriarch has more to do with paternal or father, you know, the head of the household type of phenomena. Matriarch has to do with some systems, the grandmother, or the sense of queen or king, or however you want to define those phenomena. But in those kinds of tribal types of process, that there was usually somebody who was at the top, who oversaw the whole family, and who was the ultimate one to set responsibility in terms of boundaries, in terms of authorities, in terms of a structure, in terms of what's appropriate behavior, what's not appropriate behavior, in terms of consequences for those behaviors. And so everybody kind of fit into the system in that there was a place. Now, part of the reason for this kind of phenomenon was that in this tribal type of union, usually in the small villages or tribal settings, in centuries past, that village was trying to cope and survive. In other words, there was something that was a common bonding factor. They had to work well together because their very survival depended on it. Their survival depended on it, one, because if they didn't get out there and hunt and farm and do the stuff, they didn't eat. Okay, if they didn't get out there and cut the wood and build the houses and stack the stuff, you know, they froze to death in the wintertime. They were in the wild, there were natural enemies, and so there were lots of things, tasks that had to be done. So virtually, the primary focus in the tribal phenomenon was survival. And so a lot of the boundaries and rules were very clear because there was a common need and purpose and function. Well, this process began to change to the concept of civilizations. And what that meant was that these tribal peoples began to move together in much larger congregations, cities. And what happened in that kind of structure is a different kind of focus. The benefit it brought for us is that it began to focus us on specialization. That rather than one family having to take care of all of the needs, or one tribe having to take care of all of their own needs, you could move into an area where there were people who did the farming, and people who were the blacksmiths, and people who, you know, specialized in carpentry, and people who did the making of clothes, and people who did, you know, the baking and this kind of stuff, and people who did the hunting, you know, and people who were the warriors and the fighters. And so what you began to see was that people began to specialize. Now, the disadvantage of what happened in civilizations is that it became much harder to try to order or to rule. So you began to see more governmental structures in terms of people who were leaders, okay, of the people as a whole. But again, the more people you have gathered together, kind of the axiom of organizational development is, the better you get at solving problems, the faster you go into crisis. And when an organization becomes large and big, then the crises begin to multiply themselves. And so as people began to specialize, it became more a focus of that we needed more units within this civilization to be able to manage and respond to that. Now, traditionally in the early development of civilization, especially in the Judeo-Christian, church and spirituality were at the center of family worship. That what began to happen as we had our work to go out and do, see, but in the Jewish tradition, especially in the Old Testament tradition, the synagogue, the place of worship, was a place where the community came together to hash out everything. And there were elders who were kind of the responsible leaders who would discuss problems. And that central place is not only a place of worship, but we brought everything to it. And you started with this central worship, but then you each went to your own home and family, and you all carried on the same rituals in the family. So that was one of the ways and one of the real values and meanings of church and spirituality, because it was a way to keep the family intact together. There were rituals and rites of passage, you know, through the Jewish tradition, and you came together in central worship as a community, but then you went out and you carried on the word or the law or the commandments. So church was very important in those early stages of civilization in terms of being able to be a central focal place where community and family came together. And that was also the basis of how the evolution of the extended family became important, because tradition was absolutely essential. The passing on of stories, you know, the passing on of skills, the sharing of the family secrets and the family trade. You know, it's kind of such and so in sons, and when the boys grow up, they learn their father's trade, or they learn somebody else's trade who's close in the family. And things were passed on generationally because, again, for the sake of survival of civilizations, there needed to be kind of a salvation history, a process, a passage, a rites of passage, so that there was something that they had to hang on to. Now, this lasted for thousands of years, but in the last several hundred years has been a new evolution and involvement that has dramatically changed the course of human nature. And that has been the advent of technology. Because what happened with the advent of technology is that we became real preoccupied with our ability to see the resources of the earth and to use the resources of the earth for the sake of what our own particular needs were. So we started to build machinery, and we started to build factories, and we began to, you know, start making things for the sake of convenience and for the sake of benefiting and eliminating a lot of the toil and the work. And then we developed computers, and we developed automation, and suddenly we were able to start mass producing things in our culture. We developed the automobile, we developed the airplane, and suddenly our world expanded. Because remember, like in the tribal times, you know, that person's concept of world may have existed in a 10 or 15 mile radius, because they used predominantly foot to get around. Maybe horses and extended something out further, but not much. Civilizations extended it somewhat more, but still the center was around here. But in the age of technology, one of the things that's happened to us in our culture is that we have become a real diaspora. You know, we have dissipated. We are real separated. We are broken up into a lot of minorities. It used to be believed 50 years ago that 90% of family would always stay and live within a 25-mile radius of their home of origin. Today, what we find is that people move hundreds and thousands of miles away, that families get spread out all over the culture. Now, what that does is it does a number of different things. One, when people get involved in factory work, suddenly, while we are mass producing and profiteering and recognizing, there is a kind of a loss of sense of value and meaning. You know, it's hard to go to Boeing and turn ratchets all day long and find a real valuable meaning in that kind of work when you become more specialized and more focused. And so there's a tremendous amount of stress in terms of quality and meaning of work. People began to lose a sense of vocation and purpose, whereas in these kind of areas, people had to be masters of a lot of different skills. What happened is people became more and more specialized in areas, and there's a higher preoccupation here with, here we utilize what we produce. There's a sense of value and importance because everybody's work is important. Steve, but how important is it to the world if you're tightening nuts and bolts all day long? You know, or you're a grocery checker and you're just putting things through the automatic thing all day long. So there's a sense of shifting of personal values and worth and meaning in terms of work, which puts more stress. And what we have done is that we have tended to replace, especially in Western civilization, we have tended to replace the value of workmanship with money. That the reason you do all of this arduous, boring stuff is that you do it to maintain money. And the reason you need money is because you have lost the capacity to go out and that you don't make all of your own stuff. You don't farm your own food, you go to Safeway. You don't make your own clothes, you go to Penny's or Nordstrom or Sears or, you know, wherever you happen to go. You know, you don't go down to the river and beat the clothes on the rocks, you use your Kenmore, you know. And we don't sit around and do our own kind of family discussions and entertainment. We debate over which shows we want to watch on TV that night. And everybody has a Walkman and a stereo and different kind of music. And so literally what's happened is technology, while it has created many benefits and freedoms for us, has already also taken away a lot of the sense of bondedness and community. It's separated us because we become more preoccupied. There's less need for communications when you got a TV going on. You know, they say that the average kid will go to school, 11,000 hours in their lifetime. They will watch by the time that they're 18, they will have watched 22,000 hours of TV. So what are the major influences? And they'll maybe spend 1,000 hours at most in church. So you begin to look at what are the priorities. You know, technology is this wonderful advantage because it's given us time and relieved a lot of our stresses. But what has it done? Because remember, up here, family and the whole concept of family had a very valuable communal meaning, survival. Here, it was important because of tradition. See, but now, there's not something so profound in tradition about working at Boeing. Now it's grow up, get educated, get a job, and go out and make good money for yourself. So you can move out and buy a nice car, and maybe get your own apartment, and you can shop at Nordstrom's or do, you know, whatever you want to do. See, so there's a tremendous sense of value shifting. And what happened culturally is that we went way overboard. And it was also because of this technology that we went from the shift, from an extended family where people still kind of maintain strong family ties, to being shifted all over the place. A lot of the mystics from the East, when they come to America, they talk about America as saying, you have a joke when you call yourself the land of the free. Your freedom is that you can travel a lot further than a lot of other people can who don't have the technology or the machinery that you have, but you are so obsessed with your travel, and look what happens to your family. It's hard to maintain extended family when you're 200, 300, 400, 1,000 miles, 2,000, 3,000 miles away. And so what happens is that there became a real focus on that the primary sociological unit was considered the family. That the family is the primary unit. See, and that this concept of family as mom, dad, and kids is relatively new. When you look at the historical reality of humanity, that this is relatively new. You know, that this has a much more solid tradition and history, but technology has kind of separated us and blown that apart because we have lost touch with a lot of that values. Well, we've got mom, dad, and kids. And a lot of our structures and institutions, especially church, my experience in being in the Catholic Church is that, you know, I shared with some of you in the beginning that a lot of my pain when I came back to the church after 10 years of not being a part of the church is that I was divorced. And a part of being divorced was I walked to a church that had a Catholic school, so pretty much the bent and focus of that church was families. It was a family thing. They had lots of family activities, and hopefully you put your kids in the Catholic school to get a Catholic education. But what if you weren't married? There's not much for the single adult. And that if you were familiar in a community as a couple, somebody's already mentioned before, that suddenly when you're single in that community, people don't know how to relate to you. Because there's a real couple mentality, that most of our traditions in spirituality are either family or couple traditions, and that people don't know how to relate to us when we're single again, or different. Okay, and so what happens is this church is not as big a part of that tradition. Church has kind of taken a separate step. You know, kind of 300 years ago, the church began to get involved in the metaphysical things and try to stay out of the material world. So church didn't become a real place to help people deal with the daily living problems. Church was involved in confession, reconciliation, getting you back to God, but didn't help you with your loss and grief and your divorce. They're welcome to put you into the sacraments of marriage and communion, and you know, you can be a part of the sacramental rites, but if you are broken, if you're in pain, if you're suffering, if you're in turmoil, there were no resources in churches. Suddenly, the worship place was not a place where the community gathered together, but because these civilizations turned into major urban cities, for those who lived in large urban cities, there was the problem of you go to a church at a place with maybe 200 to 500 to 1,000 different people that they were all strangers. And you all lived in neighborhoods where people really didn't know each other that well because everybody's afraid of crime on the streets. See, in these earlier times, there weren't locks on doors. Everybody knew everybody else, so the doors were open. See, but you don't do that in the city, because you know you get ripped off. So it's not unusual that people don't even know who their neighbors are. They might know who their neighbors are, but they don't do anything interaction-wise. So even the concept of neighborhood has changed. So what's happened with this technology is that our world of community and support has shrunk closer and closer. Because of technology, because of, you know, the whole capitalistic process of our culture and the obsessiveness we have for things and the dependency we have to buy things, there is this incredible pressure now on families. There's very few families. I think the percentages are that there are only 20% of families in the United States where there's one working parent. Because of the needs and the amount of expense it costs now, kind of rising inflation, that it's very, very difficult for families who are two-parent families to make it on one income. So that changes the focus of family. Because before it was believed that there was one person who stayed home and dealt with the kids, usually the wife. There was one person who went out and worked for a living and brought home the bacon, so to speak, usually the man. And those old traditional things, that traditional concepts. See, but that's not enough anymore. You add into this other phenomenon like the age of liberation. And these old traditional phenomena, and especially since we've been dominated in the church by a patriarchal culture, meaning a male-dominated culture, a male-dominated religion, we've tended to be real chauvinistic. That man had all the power and authority and women was relegated to a subservient type of role. And so the issue of parenting and the issue of home and relationships were not that significant. What was significant was war, power, money, prestige. And in a male-dominated world, much more energy was spent there, not much on the family. You know, in the male-dominated world, we made lots of rules and regulations about what it meant to be a good Christian and expected people to live up to it. But we didn't extend a whole lot of compassion to the work that it took to live in a family and the pain and the turmoil. We just assumed that that was going to happen. You know, in a male-dominated society, in a warlike society, the focus and bent on who was in charge had to do very strongly with authoritarian. So the traditions have been very much toe the line, and if they get out of line, slap them, hit them, spare the rod, spoil the child. You know, what works for your father should work for you. And what we now discover today, in the years of revelation, in the social sciences, is that we live in a tremendously abusive culture.